It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Florence is not done. It's not just the deaths. If you look at 15,000 people in shelters, more than 1,000 rescues already over the last 4 days, even 500 folks here in just Jacksonville area in shelters alone. The Coast Guard, the National Guard working around the clock, because the big problem is with this rain, Steve, with all this water, the riverbanks are bursting. You've got the New River behind me flooding this street. We're about a block off of it. It's really, really bad. The Cape Fear running all the way to Fayetteville in Lumberton, threatening the inlands. And that's why Governor Roy Cooper said, we're far from over. Tomorrow may be worse than today. Listen.
This storm has never been more dangerous than it is right now for areas from Fayetteville and Lumberton across the Sand Hills and southern Piedmont to our mountains.
Now, the water, as you see behind me in Jacksonville, makes mobility impossible for recovery crews to come in as they continue to do rescues like they did all day yesterday. Norm Bryson is the Onslow County Director of Emergency Services. Here's what he had to say.
So far, what we're dealing with is probably the most catastrophic disaster that this county has seen in the last 50 or 60 years since Hurricane Hazel came in 1954.
And you look at the personal stories. We talked to Captain Bob Beck, the owner for 22 years of the Marina Cafe, a landmark here in Jacksonville. His restaurant under a couple of feet of water, his dock under 10 to 15 feet of water. But he says he's going to try and pull through this tough time. Listen.
We've got a lot of loyal customers, and they are ready. They're ready to help and come back. And it's going to take a few months, but we'll get open, and we're going to make it great again.
And so we'll continue to move inland a little bit as this threat continues to rise, guys. It's far from over. Florence ain't done.
All right, that was Griff Jenkins this morning on Fox News, and this is Sandy Rios. Hello and happy Monday. So Hurricane Florence, as I understand it, there are about 17 deaths as of about 6 hours ago, and of course that's no small thing. And we always have to, there has to be a tenderness and a broken hearted toward anybody suffering in the midst of a hurricane. So I just want to say that before I say the next thing I want to say, because, you know, since Katrina, which is the hurricane that hit New Orleans and where the levees broke, and the left successfully managed to hang that around the neck of George W. Bush. I mean, they hammered him and hammered him and hammered him. It was all his fault. All the people that the lives that were lost, the breaking of the levees, all of that. That was his fault. The hurricane itself was his fault. That was really a turning point. And that's when, as you see, when these storms approach, we have a million officials jumping out in front of microphones to assure us that they are doing everything possible to make us safe. The thing that strikes me is always that, you know, to think that man could actually make, any man could make other people safe, that we could be safe from harm always if only government would spend enough money and send enough people. That's a notion that is just, that's so humanistic. We know that these kinds of things are in the hands of God. I mean, I'm not saying the government should not prepare, and of course that you shouldn't prepare, that you should bring in groceries or supplies or leave. If you're being warned, but it's really gotten out of control because it has become a political bludgeon. In fact, let me just give you an illustration of that. It was amazing, just amazing, that last week, while the hurricane was had not even hit shore yet, the Washington Post printed an article. It was September the 11th, like they had nothing else to write about. Another hurricane is about to batter our coast. Trump is complicit. And, of course, he's complicit because, what do you think? Because he denies climate change. And so he's complicit. However many thousands are killed in this, and they kept building it up and building up. It's going to be a category five. You know, it's going to build and build, and it's, all these people are going to die, and Trump will be responsible. If you think I'm exaggerating, just listen to this montage.
President Trump has been reaching for storm superlatives, as he is wont to do. The biggest, the worst, the most dangerous, and who can forget, tremendously wet. But while President Trump has been talking up our preparedness, his policies have been tearing down our defenses to climate change, which is often blamed for extreme weather. In fact, on the very same day Trump was discussing Florence from the Oval Office, his EPA proposed rolling back restrictions on emissions of methane, which is 25 times worse than carbon dioxide when it comes to climate change. And that's just the latest environmental policy targeted by the Trump administration. According to a July study from the New York Times, nearly 80 regulations could be on their way out. They include everything from no longer requiring chemical companies to report leaks, to cutting cars and trucks' fuel efficiency, pulling the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Accords, dismantling the Clean Power Plan, and opening nearly all our coastline to offshore drilling. It's so bad that according to two Harvard scientists, Trump's environmental policies could lead to an additional 80,000 unnecessary deaths every decade.
Where does the Trump administration stand on climate change? Well, just yesterday, President Trump rolled back Obama-era mandates blocking rogue methane leaks from oil and gas wells. Last month, the EPA weakened a rule limiting carbon dioxide pollution from coal-fired power plants. And in July, the agency reduced regulations capping greenhouse gas emissions from automobiles. These rules were all part of Obama's three-part strategy for combating climate change.
All right, so that was John Avalon from CNN and Katie Tour from MSNBC. I mean, the notion that rogue methane leaks or carbon dioxide levels or greenhouse gases could have caused that hurricane to come off from the Atlantic into the coastline of North Carolina is just, if you've ever been, just look at the ocean as the waves come in. And you think you could stop one of those waves? Do you think you could affect the tide? No human being can do this, and that's just why it's so bizarre, and yet they blame the president, they blamed George W. Bush before him, and they make non-sequitur accusations that are just ridiculous. Brian Stelter of CNN did the same thing. Let's listen.
Deepest sympathies and warmth go out to the families and friends of the victims. May God be with him. He said there five people had died, but at the time, CNN and Fox and the AP were all already reporting that the death toll stood at least 11. Now, the latest reporting by CNN is that the death toll is up to 13, and unfortunately, that death toll will likely rise. This is just one of thousands of examples of the president getting it wrong, right there again, saying five deaths have been recorded. This is his government doing the recording of the deaths. There's no word on where Trump got that number or why he added an exclamation point. There's been no correction or update yet. But here's the point. If the White House can't get the small stuff right, it makes you worry about the big stuff. And honestly, I think you should be worried because the president continues to spread conspiracy theories, even about hurricanes. Now, he does this to evade responsibility, to deflect blame, and to keep his fans fired up. But we in the press corps have to keep calling it out. We can't get immune to this. Obviously, his worst theory this week was about Puerto Rico, suggesting the death toll in the wake of Hurricane Maria was inflated by Democrats to make him look bad. Death toll denialism. I really never thought I'd see the day. While news outlets tried to explain where that 2,975 total came from, about how the study was conducted, Trump did find support, as always, from his media enablers.
The numbers were inflated, and the president was right to call out the organizations who threw out science, statistics, and evidence to discredit the Trump administration.
That was Lou Dobbs, and before that, Brian Stelter. Death toll denialism. Now, that's a new one. That's a new one. So President Trump had a number different from CNN, and so CNN, of course, must be right. And then, of course, there were, according to Brian Stelter, 3,000 people killed in Puerto Rico. And, of course, that was the topic of the discussion then, because the president had said something. Well, in fact, I'll let you listen to it. Let's move to clip number four. This is Brock Long is the head of the EPA, not the FEMA. He's the administrator for FEMA. Huge apparatus, especially after Katrina. And he was on several Sunday morning talk shows, but this is his interaction with Chris Wallace. And Chris, of course, how about those hurricanes? And how about the one in Puerto Rico? The president, you know, you'll hear it. Let's listen.
Mr. Long, obviously, one of the things you want to do in these disasters is learn from your mistakes. And the response to Hurricane Maria last year became an issue this week. Here is President Trump.
I think that Puerto Rico was an incredible unsung success. I think in a certain way, the best job we did was Puerto Rico, but nobody would understand that.
But this summer, FEMA did an after-action report that said this: the agency could have better anticipated that the severity of Hurricanes Irma and Maria would cause long-term significant damage to the territory's infrastructure. So which is it?
Our after-action report is an open and honest assessment, but the way that this works, and I keep saying this, is emergency management or successful disaster response and recovery is like a chair with four legs. One leg is the federal government. The second leg is the state and local government. The third leg is the private sector, which owns 85% of the infrastructure. And then the fourth leg is the citizen being properly prepared and neighbor helping neighbor. I think what you saw in the California wildfires to Texas to Florida is all four of those legs were present, so the chair is stable. You know, going into that, obviously in Puerto Rico, there were several parts of that chair missing. The Commonwealth and the local municipalities where we're concentrating on building a robust emergency management capability. So I'm one of the largest employers. FEMA is now one of the largest employers in Puerto Rico trying to build that capability. But when it comes to the infrastructure, the greatest thing, the deferred maintenance, the dilapidated infrastructure that was, that crumbled, is nothing that's within my control. But now we've got to go back in and fix and make sure that we're rebuilding Puerto Rico in a manner that it's more resilient, economically viable, so that we don't go through this again. And so what the nation learned is it takes all of us coming together, like what we're doing in North Carolina.
Yeah, so there you go. So the thing about the numbers in Puerto Rico, as I understand it, that the study that the media loves to cite is the one that includes all the people that died in afterwards for lack of power. And so what the FEMA administrator was trying to say, Brock Long, was we are not responsible for the infrastructure in certain places. If it's not there, we can't help that. We do these other things. We do our part, and then there are other parts that have to be done. And so you can see this is just a chance to, again, President Trump is responsible for the hurricane. It's just kind of interesting. It was interesting to me that the hurricane was downgraded. First of all, they anticipated it might get up to a 5, but they declared it as a Category 3 storm. And then, of course, it slowed down and became a Category 2 storm. And then it went from a Category 2 storm to a Category 1 until now they're describing it as a tropical depression. Now, will they give President Trump credit for that? Will they ask him how he managed that? You know, did he deploy a family member to make that happen? You know, don't look out for that. And then on a funny note, did you guys see, we should put this on our Facebook page, there was a Weather Channel weatherman who was standing, I don't know what the location was one of the worst hit areas, and he's standing in front of a sign, and he's got the wind is blowing, and he's bending over, and he's going back and forth like he's about to blow over, and he's got a hat on, and he's talking about how bad it is, and the wind gusts are so high that he can hardly, and then in the back of the camera, the back of the shot, as he's in the foreground of the shot, there are two guys walking behind him in shorts, just shuffling along, just talking and talking, not at all affected by the wind. It is just hilarious. It is so funny. And another funny part of this, Donald Trump Jr. Tweeted out a picture of Anderson Cooper in front of a camera, and he has waded into the water up to his waist and is standing in the water doing a shot. I'm not sure it's of this particular hurricane, but it's just honestly the shenanigans, and it's not funny because that's why people are not trusting the news. I find myself wondering, what's the truth about Hurricane Florence? What is the truth? So I'm sure that if 17 people are dead, it must be serious, but then what can we believe when so much is invested into using this as a tool to bludgeon the administration? You know, I've got a couple of other stories when I return of other just unbelievably fake news stories. Plus, we are going to talk about the Brett Kavanaugh accusation because that's stunning. I have lots to tell you about that. So please stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Good news. You are not stuck with your healthcare plan. Really. You have a choice, and it's a great one. It's called MediShare, and if you've heard about it and wondered what exactly it is, it's a way that people share their healthcare bills, and these are people who have a common faith, who want to be part of something beautiful that not only meets their healthcare needs, but the needs of others too, and it's people who love to save money, big time. MediShare members typically save $500 a month per family on their healthcare costs. That is a life changer for people. So this could be for you. Maybe it's what you've been looking for, a way to pay healthcare bills that's not only very smart financially, but it's even profound. MediShare is a nonprofit with 400,000 members nationwide who pray for and share with each other. So yes, you're not stuck. There's another way, and it could save you a lot. Hit *345 to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. Message and data rates may apply. That's *345.
Hello, I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Well, the last 2 years, we've just had tremendous response, early response to the announcement that we're going to Israel on a Holy Land tour. We're going March of this year. We go March of every year. Last year, we filled up like early fall, and I expect us to fill up early fall this year as well. So if you're interested in this March 14th through the 22nd tour, and you'll be going with primarily supporters of AFA and AFR, just get the brochure and check it out. You can call us today at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll mail you a brochure. If you simply want to go online, all the information is there. It's at twholyland.com, twholyland.com. If you want to go in March, we're filling up, and we're filling up fast. So check it out, twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh is facing accusations of sexual misconduct dating back to his high school years. The Guardian reports the accusations were made in a secret letter sent to Senator Dianne Feinstein. Feinstein then forwarded the letter to the FBI, which decided not to investigate. The newspaper reports 17-year-old Brett Kavanaugh allegedly tried to sexually assault a 17-year-old girl at a party back in the 1980s. Judge Kavanaugh released a statement categorically denying any wrongdoing, and dozens of women who knew the judge when he was a teenager wrote a letter vouching for his character. So what's going on here? Well, let's be clear. This is nothing short of a smear job, much like the Democrats pulled on Robert Bork and Clarence Thomas. But don't be surprised if CNN or MSNBC break into special programming with a report that the judge pulled a little girl's ponytail in preschool. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Hang on a minute. I'm trying to sort my papers out here because I have about probably 20 stories to share with you about this accuser. And it's pretty important. So I may be a little scattered here, as I tell you, because I didn't quite get finished sorting. But we're going to try to make it as clear as I can. Before I get into that, let me just tell you that we AFA is sponsoring a town hall. It's in God We Trust Town Hall. It will be with Wes Wildman and Ed Vitagliano and Brian Fisher, who is of course one of our hosts for AFR Talk. I know you guys know him and love him. So do I. Wes is, of course, the son of Tim Wildman and the grandson of Don Wildman, and you'll get to meet Wes and just get acquainted with these guys who are such important parts of the American Family Association team. It's going to be October the 2nd in Columbus, Ohio, from 6:30 to 8:30. So 6:30 to 8:30, Columbus, Ohio, and if you'd like to know, attend, that's the word I'm looking for, go to afa.net/Dublin. afa.net/Dublin. We should put that on our Facebook page because that's a little bit confusing. afa.net/Dublin. And also, we're getting ready for our October Share-a-thon. We love your stories. Love to hear from you about what AFA means to you. And if you'd like to do that, the phone number is 877-876-8893, 877-876-8893. All right, well, here's the story as best I can tell you. This is pretty shocking, actually. Not the substance of it, but just the way it's developed. Dianne Feinstein, who is the ranking member on the Senate Judiciary Committee, has, you know, claimed that she's the chief opponent of Brett Kavanaugh. She's leading the charge to make sure he doesn't get nominated. And I know that you all understand what's at stake here with this nomination. Here is a conservative judge, at least from the way he adjudicates. And I think when he went through those, 32 hours of incredible grilling by the Senate, and, you know, he was asked hundreds and hundreds of questions. More than anyone, it was over 1,000 questions, as I understand it. And some of them were like, how many Washington Redskins baseball, is it the Redskins? Sorry, guys, show my sports ignorance. Who's the baseball team? Anyway, whatever baseball team's out of D.C., the Nationals, thank you very much. How many season tickets did you buy? How many seasons? Who did you buy them for? What did you pay? I mean, those kinds of questions. He answered every single one of them. It's just been, and then of course you know about the harassment in the room, and you might not know that last week, they're putting tremendous pressure on Susan Collins, meaning the left is putting tremendous pressure on her. In fact, they sent her this cardboard cutout of male genitalia with obscene words. They sent her something like 13,000 coat hangers to represent coat hanger abortions with all kinds of obscene things. They're threatening her. They've started an online GoFundMe page from which they've raised over $1 million to try to get someone to run against her, threatening her that if she does not vote against Brett Kavanaugh, they will get her out of office. And by the way, there is a lawsuit now, or an inquiry about a lawsuit on that, because it's a bribe, really. It's a threat and a bribe. To stop a member of Congress from doing exactly what they should be doing. That was a 3-foot-long cardboard cutout of male genitalia, by the way. And Senator Orrin Hatch said this, "The left's campaign to pressure Senator Collins has gone from threats of sexual violence against young staffers to actual sexual harassment. This is abhorrent behavior and, again, deserves to be roundly condemned from the right and the left." And so that's what has been happening with Susan Collins. Now, she is supposed to meet with Brett Kavanaugh. I think she was last Friday to talk about her concerns. She's so far saying she's holding steady, but that's before this last accusation. And so the last accusation, Dianne Feinstein dropped this little hint, this little tease. I believe it was Thursday, maybe Friday, that she had an anonymous letter from an anonymous source with an accusation that she couldn't go into, but it was sexual in nature, she was handing it over to the FBI. Well, that's kind of a jaw-dropper. And now we find out that that anonymous source is a professor from Palo Alto, California. She's finally come forward. Her name is Christine Ford. She's a professor at Palo Alto, and I'm going to tell you a bit more about her in a second. This is an accusation against Brett Kavanaugh that goes back into the early 80s when he was in prep school, Georgetown prep school. And she says they were at a party, and she doesn't remember the details too well, but she went up to a restroom, and Brett Kavanaugh and his good friend, whose last name is Judge, ironically, were at the top of the stairs, and that Brett Kavanaugh pushed her down onto a bed and touched her over her clothing or bathing suit and her outer her cover for a bathing suit, and put his hand over her mouth. And she claims that she thought, I thought he might inadvertently kill me, she says. He was trying to attack me and remove my clothing. And then she says the thing that saved her was that his buddy, who was allegedly standing there watching, whose last name is Judge, I think it's Mark Judge, jumped on top of them, and she managed to get away. So that's her story. She says that she thinks it happened, I think, in 1983, something like that, just a few years ago. She didn't report it to the media. She says she finally reported it when she was in marriage counseling with her husband. And then it's interesting because she sends the counselor's notes, but the counselor's notes don't really, they don't track in terms of just the details. Talking about accusing President Trump of misnumbering, her memory to the counselor was that there were four boys, maybe four or six. again, that's one of my pieces of paper here. I'll find it shortly. But there was at least four boys. And some incident she describes as a mullet, I don't know what she described. It wasn't rape. It was whatever kids do at parties when they get drunk. I don't know. That's the reason my parents would never let me go to parties where people got drunk. But so this is what happened. And so now as a result of that, all hell is breaking loose. In fact, it truly is. The Judiciary Committee was supposed to vote on Thursday. When I first heard this, I thought, oh, this is just so silly. No one's going to take this seriously. But I was wrong. Of course, the usual suspects are taking it very seriously. Kamala Harris tweeted, Christine Blasey Ford courageously stepped forward to tell her story. It is a credible and serious allegation. The Senate has a constitutional responsibility to scrutinize SCOTUS nominees. A vote on Kavanaugh's nomination must be delayed until there's a thorough investigation. And then we have, this is Dianne Feinstein. I agree with Senator Flake that we should delay this week's vote. There's a lot of information we don't know, and the FBI should have the time it needs to investigate this new material. So this Senator Flake, I sort of skipped him because I was going to save him for last, but I didn't realize she mentioned him in her tweet. Senator Jeff Flake, member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, said in an interview on Sunday evening that until he learns more about the sexual assault, he's not comfortable voting yes on Kavanaugh's nomination. And so he's one of 11 Republicans on the Judiciary Committee, which means he alone can stop Kavanaugh from making it through the committee vote on Thursday. Jeff Flake, who was John McCain's protege. John McCain picked him, talked him into running. So the thing that I thought was, well, John McCain from the grave strikes again through his protege. And so Senator Booker, Mr. Spartacus, says it takes enormous courage to come forward publicly like this. These allegations are serious, credible, and deeply troubling. You know, can I just speak to women of a certain age? Did anything like this ever happen to you? Did you ever get into an embarrassing situation with a boy when you were like a teenager? She was 15. I'm not talking about rape. I'm just talking about things that happen when kids are left alone or they go out on dates when they're too young to handle it. I mean, it's just really incredible to me that this would become something that is allegedly criminal. By the way, Bob Corker, of course, is weighing in because he, you know, Bob Corker from Tennessee, who is not going to be serving anymore, thank God. He says he believes a vote on Kavanaugh should not be held until his accuser speaks to the Senate Judiciary Committee. So that's the way it's coming down. And here's this, you know, Brett Kavanaugh accused of something back in 1983, which, of course, it's a little hard to prove that in a bedroom oh so long ago, some woman says that you groped her and tried to take her bathing suit off, and she thought you were going to kill her. So how do you refute that? We went through this before, did we not? Didn't we just talk about sort of the same thing with Judge Roy Moore? And the ironic thing about that was I remember, and you probably will too, that the establishment Republicans were happy to hear all of the salacious allegations. Most of them, I'd say 99% of them were disproven, even though it had been so many years since the accusations had come. And Judge Moore had served so many years in public eye, highly, highly respected by the people of Alabama. But the establishment Republicans were just very happy to sit back and let him be destroyed. They weren't so outraged as they are over Brett Kavanaugh. And I submit to you, it's no different. It is just no different. And any single one of you men, any of you, could be accused of any of this at any time by someone you used to know, somebody that doesn't like you anymore, someone who, you know, fill in the blank, something you did when you were 16 and drunk, before you your life changed and you grew up. This is out of control from my perspective, just out of control. And I did find it rich. Now, look, let me just say before I play this, I think Brett Kavanaugh is a man of character, and I was very impressed with him. I also recognize that Brett was the pick of the establishment, no question about it. He was very close to the Trump, Bush. He worked in the Bush White House, of course. He worked for Ken Starr before that. So he is part of the Republican establishment. At least he has been an association. But I still felt that he was would make a very good judge. And I felt his character and personality were just so winsome, and his knowledge was just amazing. So I want to make that very clear. I felt the same way about Judge Moore, and I still do. But that's a different subject. But I found it very interesting that Karl Rove, who was happy, gleeful, as was Mitch McConnell and the others, to see Judge Moore savaged in the way he was savaged, are very upset about what's happening to Brett Kavanaugh. Let's listen to Karl Rove as he weighed in yesterday.
Well, look, this has gone from bad to worse. I mean, Senator Spartacus, D of Thrace, embarrassed himself. Kamala Harris mistook the hearing for an audition for Law and Order for a minor part as a prosecutor in Law and Order. And now we have this dreadful letter from Dianne Feinstein, who's had this since July. The letter is anonymous from somebody who doesn't want the issue pressed and doesn't want her name exposed. And suddenly we're supposed to take this as a reason to either delay the process or, worse yet, to take one of the most distinguished persons ever nominated for the Supreme Court and deny him a seat. And I think this is shameful. It's a sign of the depths to which our Congress has fallen. And this all started with a great man doing a bad thing by borking Robert Bork. And it has gotten worse and worse and worse over the years. 95% of Republicans voted for Ginsburg. 75% voted for Stephen Breyer. Half the Democrats voted for Roberts. 10% of them voted for Alito. And I would be shocked if more than one or two or three Democrats voted for Brett Kavanaugh. Thus far, the decline.
Okay, so there you go. He's rightfully upset, but he wasn't upset about Judge Moore, and neither were the rest of them. They were happy, and they handed the country Doug Jones, the Democrat, who will vote with the Democrats, and the left. No question about it. Judge Moore, though, would have challenged them because he was unwavering and truthful. Just a little bit too much. It's just, you know, when the establishment gets really upset, they generally, oh, the gentleman from Ohio, they're so gentlemanly. They don't generally get upset at anything except conservatives. I remember when Mitch McConnell got his dander up, he was going to crush the Tea Party. And he pretty much cooperated in helping have that happen. I don't think the IRS has ever been held accountable for what they did to the Tea Party. But I could go on and on, but I have to make that point. I just have to. But now that doesn't mean I'm happy, oh my goodness, no, about what they're doing to Brett Kavanaugh. I think this is disgraceful. I want to fill in some more blanks. I've gotten so much information about this, and some of this you may not hear. And so let me just scattershot this a little bit. This is just so you understand, this letter came back in the summer. It was handed to, this anonymous letter, was handed to Representative Anna Eshoo, who passed it to Dianne Feinstein, who sat on it. She sat on it until the last minute. Right before the vote was supposed to take place this Thursday, I think it was Friday, when she revealed that she had an anonymous letter from an anonymous source about some undescribed sexual assault. So the anonymous, who was no longer anonymous, it's Christine Ford, has hired Deborah Katz. Deborah Katz is a whistleblower attorney who works with Me Too survivors. So this is a Me Too moment, which we should all be so proud. You know how I feel about the Me Too movement. I've told you before. I find it appalling, to be honest with you. The problem is, it's kind of like calling everything racism. There is real racism, which is abhorrent. But opposing health care for universal health care is not racism. Neither is, you know, not embracing climate change. Everything is racism. And so that it makes the real thing have no, doesn't raise any, the real thing then gets neglected. It's the same thing with sexual assault. Rape or sexual assault is a horrible thing, and it destroys lives for boys and girls, I might add. But the Me Too movement is about destroying people's lives. And, you know, things like this happening back in 1983 when there was no rape. I mean, even if it happened, there was no rape. It was a sexual encounter. Though I would be sexual encounter if it happened. Anybody can say anything, especially, 40 years ago, and it seems to be okay now. Just even the hint of it. I think that's frightening. And I defend my brothers, and I mean the other sex, every chance I can, because I just think it's gotten out of hand. I have a lot more to tell you about this accuser So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
What would it take for you to compromise your principles? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Recently, I heard a statement that went like this. I don't think principles matter if you can't get elected. Principles form the core of who you are. Principles form the foundation of a civil society. George Washington, in his farewell address, identified religion and morality as indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, George Washington said. It makes me think of a scripture. What would it profit a man to gain the whole world yet lose his soul? What would it profit a candidate to gain an election but lose his principles?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. In the wake of Hurricane Florence, environmental hysterics are mindlessly trying to convince Americans that the frequency of hurricanes is on the increase and that it's the fault of global warming. Don't let them lie to you. The truth is, according to the National Hurricane Center, that the average number of hurricanes making landfall in America per decade has fallen since 1850. During the last 50 years, an average of 5.6 hurricanes struck the United States. But not one single decade in the last 50 years saw an above-average number of hurricanes. In the 50 years before that, an average of 8.4 major hurricanes hit the U.S. per decade. Let's be sure we're listening to actual climate science instead of climate science fiction.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio. The Ministry of Preborn meets abortion-minded women right where they are and reaches them with the love of Christ.
We showed her love, and we accept her right where she's at. If the baby's saved by what we do here and the mother's life is spared from the devastation of abortion, that definitely helps them in this life. But this is not all that there is. We want our clients to know about Jesus.
I got to see his heartbeat. It kind of just looked like a little butterfly in a bubble. The Lord gave me that baby, and he gave me that baby for a reason.
The Ministry of Preborn runs and leads Christian pregnancy centers all over the country, helping abortion-minded mothers to choose life for their unborn babies. To find out more about how you can help save a baby's life, go to preborn.com or dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. All gifts are tax deductible.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Under circumstances that can only be described as suspicious, Judge Brett Kavanaugh has been accused of conduct while in high school towards a young woman that is being seized upon to justify keeping him off the Supreme Court. He adamantly denies the charge. It's noteworthy that 65 women who knew Judge Kavanaugh in high school have joined many others who have studied and or worked with him since in attesting to his outstanding character, integrity, and honorable treatment of others in general and women in particular. Brett Kavanaugh is an all-American, one whose intellect, patriotism, religious conviction, and selfless service, both in government and of the charitable kind, exemplifies what is best about our country. Those who are tempted to deprive him and us of his brilliant jurisprudence on the Supreme Court should get a grip and get on with his confirmation. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. I'm eager to get back to the details of this Brett Kavanaugh accusation. You might wonder what his response has been to this, and he says, I categorically and unequivocally deny this allegation. I did not do this back in high school or at any time. If you've just tuned in, Brett Kavanaugh has been accused of some sexual assault back in 1983 when he was in high school by a woman who is now a professor at Palo Alto University in California. We'll talk about who she is in just a second, but I wanted to give you just some more background. Mark Judge is the friend of Brett Kavanaugh, who was allegedly present at that time. He has reiterated his strong denial of allegations that he watched as Brett Kavanaugh allegedly sexually assaulted a girl when he and Kavanaugh attended a party while they were in high school more than three decades ago. The accuser, Christine Blasey Ford, claims that she was able to escape when Judge, meaning Mark Judge, jumped on top of her and Kavanaugh and dislodged the two. Mark Judge was Kavanaugh's friend and classmate at Georgetown Preparatory School. The Post story claims that Kavanaugh and Judge were both stumbling drunk when the two, as the Post characterized it, corralled her into a bedroom during a gathering of teenagers at a house in Montgomery County. All right, so Mark, here, before Ford's name was publicly released on Sunday, Mark Judge strongly denied that the incident ever occurred. It's just absolutely nuts. I never saw Brett act that way. Last week, not to get, you know, miss out on the action, so we got the Washington Post publishing the letter yesterday. We got the New York Times last week saying, citing a secretive letter shared with senators and federal investigators by the senior Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee about allegations from an unnamed woman. I never saw anything like what was described, Mark Judge told New York Times at the time. And then Kavanaugh, again, let me just repeat, said, I categorically and unequivocally deny this allegation. I did not do this back in high school or at any time. And so that's the response from then. I want to go back to an earlier response. This would be, this is the White House responding to the New York Times reporting of this anonymous letter by an anonymous person with anonymous details last week. The White House responded, throughout his confirmation process, Judge Kavanaugh has had 65 meetings with senators, including Senator Feinstein, set through over 30 hours of testimony, addressed over 2,000 questions in a public setting, and additional questions in a confidential setting. Not until the eve of his confirmation has Senator Feinstein or anyone raised the specter of new information about him. Throughout 25 years of public service, the Federal Bureau of Investigation has thoroughly and repeatedly vetted Judge Kavanaugh, dating back to 1993, for some of the most highly sensitive roles. He has served in the Office of Independent Counsel, the White House, and on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, all before his nomination earlier this year to serve as Associate Justice to the Supreme Court. Then the administration blamed Senator Schumer. Senator Schumer's promise to oppose Judge Kavanaugh's nomination with everything I have, it appears he is delivering with this 11th-hour attempt to delay confirmation. That was a statement from the White House. All right, so what about Christine Ford? Well, here's the thing. She has, in the interim, scrubbed all of her social media. So it's hard to determine a lot of things about her. So I'm going to tell you, there are a lot of people investigating her background. One of them is just amazing. It just came in my inbox right before I went on the air. And I'll get to that one actually in just a second. But I want to tell you what was already coming out. Again, she scrubbed her online accounts, but someone found, this is from a link called Rate My Professor. And this is what someone wrote. But, you know, who knows? Again, like her accusation of Brett Kavanaugh, how could you verify this? But this is what a student said. Christine Ford is the worst educator I have ever experienced. Avoid taking her class and avoid any interaction with this person. I feel like she has something wrong with her, and I'm surprised no one has caught this. Also avoid Fullerton's MSW program as long as she is there. Yeah, I don't know. So because she scrubbed her social media, people are just finding anything that they can, and this is what they're finding. And so here's an article that is verified. I looked this up. This is an article. Christine Blasey Ford made special brain, I can't say, you know those pink hats? They have a horrible name because they represent something very personal on a woman that the women wore at the Women's March. She designed special of those that were made out of brain. Fake, you know, made to look like brains, but in the shape, to wear at an anti-Trump march for science. She is a Democrat. Let's see. So there is an archive of an old LinkedIn page for her, and it's got all of her past positions, but I'm not going to go through that, but she has deleted her social media pages. Her full name is Christine Blasey Ford. She signed a letter with other health professionals demanding that President Donald Trump stop his controversial policy of family separations at the border. She signed the letter as Christine Blasey, and it was used as an exhibit in an ACLU lawsuit against the Trump administration. The Washington Post reports that she's a registered Democrat who has made small contributions to political organizations. So that's the, because these are just, you know, little clues. We really don't know because she's managed to scrub her thing. But I bet this is what she, the letter said that they submitted opposing the president's, what they're blaming the president for is that separation at the border. And remember, that was a policy put in place by the Democrats. If I haven't made that clear, I needed to. It was a Democrat, Obama appointee judge, and it was legislation the Democrats passed that children could not remain in detention for more than 20 days. They could not be held in a facility for more than 20 days. But their parents, who had come across the border illegally, could not be released because they had to be adjudicated or sent back to their home. So the kids were separated from their parents, if they were indeed their parents. And now we're finding out in most cases they weren't even their parents. But if they were, they were separated and moved into these facilities, these beautiful facilities that were built where the kids were fed very well. They have playgrounds, they have education, they've got medical treatment. And that was the terrible, no good, horrible thing that President Trump was doing, which they had to, by law, do what they were doing, because the kids could not stay with their parents in the holding facilities. But that's what that was all about. So this letter says, the intentional infliction of pain on children and their families is not just inhumane, it also fails to meet the stated goals of deterrence. Punishing parents of family separation may cause damage to their children. She wrote an article, we know one article she wrote. I think she wrote a lot of articles, but this is one somebody cited. Does gender moderate the relationship between childhood maltreatment and adult depression? So just gives you an idea of her kind of area of work. But so we know, what do we know? We know she was a Democrat. She donated to Democrats. She know that she cooperated with the ACLU, which is it's kind of the SPLC of the past. I mean, the ACLU is still, it's the legal arm of the left, and they do some really terrible things. So that's her affiliation. And now, this is what came in my inbox just a few minutes ago. Breaking news, Christine Ford's parents were defendants in a 1996 foreclosure case, and guess whose mom was the judge? This is from America First, and it's a researcher named Larry Beach. He said, folks, Christine Ford's mom, Paula K. Blasey, and dad, Ralph G. Blasey, were defendants in a foreclosure case in Maryland in 1996. And guess who the judge was? Martha Kavanaugh, mother of Brett Kavanaugh. You can't make this up. Christine Ford's parents, Paula Blasey and Ralph Blasey, were the defendants. Okay, so this list of coincidences continues. We are sure this is just another one of those instances. We'll let you decide as we keep bringing you the truth. And so then Larry Beach goes on to write, it appears there was an ongoing judgment starting at least in 1990, seven cases culminating in a foreclosure case in 1996 for which Martha Kavanaugh was the judge. There was also a 1982 contract case, but I can't determine the details here. Her father appears to have been an attorney, tons of cases referencing that. His relationship professionally with Kavanaugh should be looked at. There's more to this story than originally appeared. Okay, so that's the story that just came out again. And you can expect that in the next several hours, in this next few days, there are going to be lots of reporters and, not from the mainstream media, but there are going to be lots of people who are truth seekers who are going to try to find as much as they can about this accuser. And I think we're already seeing kind of the trajectory of where it's going, don't we? Hans von Spakovsky has a really good article on this. Democratic Senators owe Kavanaugh and the American people a collective apology, but don't expect to get one. Hans kind of traces the way Kavanaugh has been treated. He points out that Kavanaugh was asked 1,278 questions, written questions, in addition to his 32 hours of grilling. And he talks about how silly some of the questions are. So we'll put that on our Facebook page so you can read it and share it. It kind of gives a good kind of synopsis. I wanted to, that's that for today. But I want to tell you just a few other things. You know, I started out by talking about that, the hurricane, Hurricane Florence, and the blaming of President Trump for that hurricane because he's a climate change denier. And the irony of the storm being downgraded, you know, from a 3 to a 2 to a 1. It's just amazing. And then, of course, the obvious question was, President Trump, did he manage to downgrade it, and how did he do that? And then I talked to you about how the media portrayed the hurricane, how they exaggerated, how the Weather Channel reporter acted like the wind was blowing him over and was just made a fool of when two people walked behind him in the camera shot, walking normally and just kind of having a good time. We are living in an age where we just cannot trust the media. And I want to give you a couple of more examples. Do you remember last week at the ceremony at Shanksville, Pennsylvania? It actually happened, I think, last Sunday, before 9/11. President Trump flew in to talk to the crowd. And you might recall, but you might not have heard this, but you should hear it, because there were claims that he, let me just read these claims. Mediaite says, watch Trump do a double fist pump as he arrives at the solemn 9/11 memorial. Then the Democratic Coalition says, while on his way to the memorial service, the mentally deteriorating sociopathic president bizarrely tweeted, 17 years since September 11th. Chris Hariota says, now the president is seen fist bumping on his way to the field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where 40 people died. And then another person says, Trump gave a double fist bump at the 9/11 memorial, explaining why he wasn't invited to McCain's funeral. All right, so the picture then is showing President Trump walking. Melania is behind him and a couple of people, and he is doing a double fist bump. So they're saying that, you know, how dare he at this hallowed ground, how dare he do that? Well, a National Guardsman who's not identifying himself by name came out and wrote to the Daily Caller that's not at all what happened. I was right there. I can tell you exactly. He says, prior to his arrival, the reserves and National Guard were allowed together in a designated area to greet him prior to his boarding helicopter and flying to the Flight 93 memorial service. He wasn't even on location yet. And as he approached us soldiers, Marines, and airmen, many were shouting and waving at him. That's when he did the double fist pump. He was genuinely happy to say hello and shake hands, and you could tell he was proud to be greeted by his military members. I'm telling you this because not even an hour later, the press was criticizing him for doing that on hallowed ground, and he should have been more respectful of the heroes of Flight 93. Well, I got to see firsthand how biased the liberal media is towards him. They took a photo, completely twisted it around to make him look bad, and it was nowhere near the truth. And so the fake news continues. And then I want to close. Actually, this is with Barack Obama speaking in Ohio in a rally on Thursday night. And we'll just, I'll let you listen to him. This is clip one.
And by the time I left office, wages were rising and poverty and uninsured rates were falling. So just remember that when you hear these folks bragging about this economic miracle, just remember when it started. Just remember when the ball got rolling. You know, We spent 8 years pushing that boulder up the hill. We finally get to the top. It starts rolling down the hill. And then these folks come in and say, look at what we're doing. They're standing there. They didn't break a sweat.
All right, that's enough. That was Barack Obama speaking in Ohio. You just wonder, will the truth be able to penetrate all these lies? Can those of us who stand on the truth and speak the truth, can we penetrate through that darkness? And will we be able to penetrate through this news media that is continually hell-bent on telling us things that aren't true? And how many of us really want to hear the truth? And how many people are informed? I can't answer those questions. But I do know this, our God is the God of all truth, and we will continue to stand by that truth and speak it no matter what. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.